So if you've got a Bible tonight, turn with me to the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is where we're going to be for the majority of our study tonight. About 13 years ago, in 2005, quarterback Tom Brady sat down with Steve Croft for a 60 Minutes interview that, of course, was showed on CBS. And towards the end of that interview, he had this to say: "Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there is something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I think it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's cracked up to be." I hesitated to use this as my opener tonight because we are in the heart of Colts country. And of course, the rivalry runs very deep. And of course, it's 13 years ago. But the first time I heard this, and even now, it resonates with me. The fact that he was an incredibly successful, and still is. In fact, since that interview, he's added 2 Super Bowl rings to his collection. But it resonates with me because here you have an incredibly successful man. In fact, when he sat down to this interview, he was only 27 years old, which is 1 year less than me. And for many of you, much younger than you. But he had accomplished so much more from maybe an earthly perspective that you and I could ever dream to accomplish. I mean, this guy is successful by any definition we could come up with. But here he is, having enjoyed all of that, saying, there's got to be more to life than this. I think it resonates with me and maybe with you because Tom Brady here is speaking very honestly, saying what we all deep down feel inside of us. The question is, though, are we going to be that honest? I think all of us understand that there's a sense in which we need meaning, we need fulfillment, we need something to give us purpose beyond what we find, the successes we have, the accomplishments we have in this world, but are we going to acknowledge it? And that's what these series of lessons this weekend is all about. We all deep down need a sense of meaning beyond this world. So we sometimes struggle with this sense of emptiness, of loneliness. And so where do we find purpose? Where do we find joy? Where do we find grace and hope and truth and peace? And that's what we're going to be talking about this weekend. In the New Testament, in Acts chapter 17, the Apostle Paul gives us a very simple answer to that question of where we find meaning. Acts chapter 17, beginning in verse 26. He says, "From one man, God made all the nations, that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us." So the Apostle Paul's answer, God's answer to us, when we ask this question, where do we find purpose and meaning in this life, is that God created us to reach out to him, to seek him. 3 things I want you to notice about this. First of all, that if we want purpose, if we want joy, if we want meaning in this life, we find those things in God. Because that's what we were created to do. We were created to seek after God. But secondly, notice that Paul says here that God is not far from each one of us. In other words, God is very easily accessible to us if we would just reach out to him, the NIV says. If only we would seek him, if only we would try. God is accessible to us. You put those 2 thoughts together, the fact that joy and hope and peace comes from God, and that God is accessible to us, what that means is that joy and hope and peace and purpose is accessible to us. Sometimes we act as if, you know, the meaning of life is so far out of our reach, so far out of our grasp, but it is not if we will just seek and search for God. I want to tell you tonight that Tom Brady was not the first person to ever say, there's got to be more to life than this. People have been saying that for centuries and centuries and centuries. But the book that you're looking at least if you have your Bibles open to Ecclesiastes, that's what this book is all about. Ecclesiastes answers this question of what life is all about. This entire book of Ecclesiastes is devoted to asking and answering this question. Because it was written by an old man, a lot of people believe it was written by Solomon. Not going to be dogmatic about that, but if it was Solomon, then Solomon wrote this at a very old age. He had lived his life full of all kinds of all kinds of riches and all kinds of pleasures. He lived the life that we sometimes envy and say, boy, if I lived that kind of life, I would be really happy. But he left feeling miserably empty. And he writes this book chronicling his quest for meaning in life. And he talks about how he tried to fill his life with all these physical things, successes and accomplishments. And at the end of the day, it left him empty, with emptiness and nothing to show for it. And so he wrote this book to answer this question of where we find purpose beyond this world. Tonight, I just want to make two simple points. The first point being that without God, life is empty. And by the way, these are the two very basic points that Ecclesiastes is all about. First tells us that life is empty and meaningless without God. And secondly, it tells us that life is full if we have God. Those are the two points I want us to think about tonight. So let's begin thinking about what the book of Ecclesiastes has to say about the emptiness of life without God. Look in chapter 1, the first couple of verses here. Chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. And most of the passages are going to be on the screen tonight, but I do encourage you, if you have a Bible, to follow along there as well. In the NIV, it says, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem." And by the way, those are the phrases that more or less key us into that it could possibly be Solomon writing this for us. But he says in verse 2, "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. So he begins this book with this explanation or this exclamation of despair. You know, if we try to fill our lives with all kinds of worthless and purposeless things, this is what we're going to end up saying. That it leaves me with nothing. It leaves me with just nothing to show for it. Everything is meaningless without God. And as the writer goes on in the book of Ecclesiastes, he talks about how the things that he tried to fill his life up left him feeling like this. Three things I want to point out to you that point us to the fact that there must be a purpose beyond this world. In chapter 2, for example, Ecclesiastes talks about how he tried to fill his life with pleasure and possessions and success, and it left him with vanity. Chapter 2, this is one of the passages that I want us to read together. It's a little bit lengthy reading, but it's very fundamental to understanding the purpose of life. Chapter 2, verse 1, "I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said, of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly, until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. And I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees." That first section there talks about how he invested things. If he was alive today, the author here would be a successful investor or a successful businessman or developer. He's building all these things, trying to find meaning in them. And of course, with all of that success comes power, comes influence, and comes money. He talks about those in verses 7 and 8. "I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines." So the author here has been incredibly successful, again, with these business endeavors and the money that comes from that. In verse 9, then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Let's stop right there before we get to verse 11 and just make this point. That if you live this way, if you are incredibly successful by this definition, like the author here was, you're going to find a sense of happiness. I mean, who wouldn't enjoy the wealth and the power and the success like this? Who wouldn't enjoy winning a Super Bowl? Is that going to make us happy? Sure, it makes us happy. But the question is, what do you do the morning after the Super Bowl? What do you do the week after the Super Bowl? What do you do the year after the Super Bowl? When that brevity of happiness is gone, verse 11 talks about that. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Yes, the things of this world can make us happy for a brief time, but once those things are gone, or once those things, you know, no longer satisfy us, there's this, again, this sense of emptiness, this vanity. And he says that in verse 11, this is striving after wind. It's like trying to catch the wind or catch the air in your arms. You can't do it. A few weeks ago, I was on the back of my deck and grilling. And of course, when you grill, there's a lot of smoke. And our oldest son, Samuel, was there with me. And he asked me, can I catch the smoke? And it was really kind of amusing trying to watch him grasp the smoke, catch it. He couldn't do it. It's impossible. You're just left with nothing in your hands. That's exactly what life is like if you try to find purpose in the things of this world. Have you ever envied those who seem to have it all? We look at people who are successful or good-looking or celebrities in this life, and they say, they're successful, therefore they must be happy. But that's not always the case. And it certainly wasn't the case of the man who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. There's a second thing that he points us to as pointing to something greater in this than this world. He talks about the injustice of suffering and oppression. In chapter 4, in verse 1, he writes, then I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun. And behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. But on the side of their oppressors was power, and they had no one to comfort them. In chapter 8, in verse 14, he makes a similar point. Chapter 8, verse 14. There is futility which is done on the earth. That is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. On the other hand, there are evil men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I say that this too is futility. You ever wonder before why bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? You know that happens. It's almost like the author here was watching today's news. We get discouraged and we get depressed of the things we see happening in our world today, the oppression, the violence, the injustices, the things that just, you know, tear us up inside. Those things have been happening since really the time began in this world. And the point of this lesson is not to answer the question of why God allows that to happen. That's a good question. A good discussion for another time. But the fact that those things happen, the point tonight is that the fact that those things happen point us to something greater here in this world. This world is full of sadness. It's full of things that do not fulfill us, that bring us nothing but despair. And that means there's something greater that we must look to. And there's a third thing, perhaps the saddest of all, that the writer talks about. He talks a lot about the reality of death. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 19 and 20. He says, for the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. All go to the same place. All came from the dust, and all return to the dust. Now, we do understand, as we're going to talk about tonight, we have a soul. We're not just physical bodies, but the point of this passage here is to talk about how meaningless life is without God. That if we have not the perspective of viewing things from the eternal perspective and thinking of God, then this is exactly the conclusion that we come to, that we are no different than the animals. that we're going to die just like the animals. We're all going to turn to dust. And that really is a sad thought. This is all meaningless. This is all nothing without God. And we don't like to think about death. We don't like to sit and contemplate what it's going to be like, but the reality of death is that it's going to happen to all of us. The reality is it's there, the cold, hard reality. And the author here is challenging us, encouraging us to think about that and think about what that shows us. The reality of death tells us there is something greater than what we see in this world. This sounds pretty depressing, doesn't it? All the depressing things in the book of Ecclesiastes, but really, I think that's the point. The point is to show us the miserable emptiness that we live if we do not serve God. The question I want to ask you now is that, why is this the case? Why do we feel so empty without God? Why is that the case? Well, in chapter 3 and verse 11, I think the author gives us the answer to that question. He says that God has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. The phrase I want you to think about is that God has set eternity in your heart. What does that mean? It means that there is a longing within us that searches for an eternal God. Only the eternal God can satisfy our eternal longings. You know, we were designed and we were built not just to live this life, but we were designed to search for God, as Paul said in Acts chapter 17. If you go back to Genesis chapter 2, where God created Adam and Eve, it says in verse 7 that God formed Adam out of the dust. That's talking about the body that he made for him. But then it says that God breathed into him the breath of life. That's not just an animal-like breath of life. That's the soul that's given to us. And then it says, and then he became a living soul. You and I are composed, yes, of a physical body that is going to die and decay, but there's another part of us that's called a soul or the spirit in the Bible. And that's the part of us that God gave to us to cry out for him. That's the part of us that we're talking about tonight. The part of us that feels empty without its maker. There are a few people who are very brilliant, other than the author of Ecclesiastes, who have talked about this. I want to give you a couple of examples. In the 17th century, there was a French mathematician named Pascal, or Pascal. And this is what he says. What else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in man a true happiness of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace? This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there the help he cannot find in those that are, though none can help. Since that this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object, in other words, by God himself. Now that's a mouthful. And I don't necessarily agree with all of his theology that he speaks of there. But the basic point of what he's saying is that there is an emptiness within us. There's a hole within us that needs God to fill it. And the more we try to fill our lives with stuff and relationships that are just on this earth, the more we try to fill our lives with physical things that are not going to last, the more empty we're going to feel. Because only God can satisfy us. A couple centuries later, C.S. Lewis, in his classic work, Mere Christianity, says this: if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. Again, you and I were not created just for this world. We were created for a different world, a better world, and a more lasting world. And that's the message of Ecclesiastes, at least the first point. Life is empty without God. But again, there's another side. The point that the writer then goes on to make is that life is full with God. It's not just a book of depression and sadness, but it gives us the answer to the question, what is the meaning of life? And if we fulfill that meaning, if we live according to that purpose, then the author says, then we will really enjoy this life to its fullness. Go back to Ecclesiastes, this time chapter 12, the very end of the book. The very end of the book highlights man's ultimate purpose. Read with me verses 13 and 14. The conclusion when all has been heard is this: fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Man's ultimate purpose is about serving and fearing God. That's what it's all about. I want you to notice a couple things about this. First of all, notice the author's emphasis on all or in entirety. First of all, he says, when all has been heard. Again, we talked about the things that he tried to fill his life with. If there is someone who had it all, it was this guy. But he says, seeing all of that, this is what it's all about. When all has been heard, it's about fearing God and keeping His commands. For God will bring every deed, every act under judgment. Everything that is hidden, whether it is good or evil. The point is that he's focusing on everything. This is the bottom line of what every person's life and action is all about. This is what we really need to be focused on. Not the things of the world that cannot satisfy, but fearing the God who created us. This is what it's all about. Let me just take a brief detour here and make a point of application. Sometimes when we talk about, we want God's plan for my life. I've heard people ask that. What's God's plan for my life? That's a good question. A very good question. But a lot of times when we ask that question, the answers that we're looking for is, what kind of house does God want me to buy? Or what kind of car does He want me to buy? Or what kind of job should I take? Or where does God want me to live? And God in His wisdom and His word can help us answer those questions. But those aren't the biggest questions of life. The biggest question of life that we need to be thinking about when we think about God's plan or God's purpose for me, we need to be thinking about honoring our Creator. That's what it's all about. I'm not trying to minimize those other things, but the point is that those things are not what life is really all about. God's plan for your life is spelled out right here. And if we do that, then he says, only then can we really fully enjoy life. A couple passages I want you to notice in Ecclesiastes that make this point. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. I know there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor, it is the gift of God. Again, in chapter 5, verses 18 through 20, he says, here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. God wants us to be happy. He certainly wants us to enjoy the blessings. Sometimes we assume sometimes that it's wrong for us to enjoy the pleasures of this world. It's wrong for those that have the wealth of this world to enjoy them. This passage tells us it's good for them to enjoy that, because it is the gift of God. It's good for us to be happy in this life, but the point that Ecclesiastes is making is those are God's gift to you. The reason he's giving them to you is because he wants you to serve him. In gratitude and honor and reverence for him, he wants you to turn to him and recognize that. And only if we recognize these as God's gift can we fully live out our purpose and fully enjoy life. Now, in just a few minutes, Ben's going to talk to us about what that joy looks like and defining that joy and where we find it. But the point right now is that we can't have it unless we live according to the purpose for which we were designed. And Jesus himself also has something to say in the New Testament about the purpose of life. Jesus says to us, in essence, there is more to life. And that's all about eternity. So in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is warning against worry and anxiety. And this is what he has to say. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25. For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? In other words, life is about more than this physical stuff, even physical comfort. Life isn't about just trying to live a comfortable life. And then he tells us, completing that thought in verse 33, what the true meaning of life is. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. If we prioritize the eternal things, the things that we were created to seek for, God's going to take care of the rest. Jesus says there is more to life. But I want to close tonight with an even more pointed statement that Jesus makes in Matthew chapter 16, verse 26. Matthew chapter 16, verse 26. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? I want you to think about that quote, that statement, not as it applies to Tom Brady or someone else that you might think of as being highly successful in life. Don't think of how it applies to your neighbor or someone at work who you know is very successful, but think about how it applies to you. And what does this quote from Jesus say about the purpose for which you were created? If you were to gain everything that you could ever want in this world, but then lose your soul, you would have nothing to show. You would have nothing in eternity. The point is that you have a purpose. You have a purpose that goes beyond this world. We all need a purpose. We all need something to get us up in the morning and live for. But you have a purpose that goes beyond this world, something to look forward to in eternity. A couple years ago, I talked to an older gentleman who had been in a horrible car accident, and he had almost died. And he was describing to me just how terrible it was, and he concluded that God, because he saved him from that, he had a purpose for him, that God had something that he wanted him to do, and that's why God rescued him and saved him from that. And thinking about that later on, it dawned on me that that is true of every single one of us, regardless if we've been in a near-death experience. The fact that we were born and the fact that we exist today means God has something for us to do. And the question is, are we going to do it? We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll convene and after about 10 minutes with a song, and then we'll turn the time over to Ben, who's going to talk to us about joy. If you need to use the restrooms, go through the foyer, take a right down that hallway. The ladies will be on the left and the men's on the right. So thank you for your attention.